Hail, hail. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Celtic Lifetime 11 podcast, brought to you by CelticUnderground.net. Hello, I am Anthony Murray and I am the host of a new podcast for the CelticUnderground.net, the Celtic Lifetime 11, a podcast in which I will take a Celtic fan guest to come along and discuss the best Celtic 11 they ever saw with their own eyes. Cherry picking who they saw down the years. One rule is they're not allowed to pick people they didn't see. So for example, if I was to do it, I couldn't pick Jimmy McGrory. If there's any surviving people that saw Jimmy McGrory play, they are more than welcome to get in touch and come on the show. That would be quite interesting. Although I imagine a grandchild of some sorts would have to set up a Skype call because there's no way they're pulling that off. Anyway, I am not Harry Brady, as you can tell. And this isn't the same as the normal Celtic Underground podcast. It's a bit like Rogue One in the Star Wars universe, where we're doing our own thing with the permission of Disney. Harry. Hello, welcome to the Celtic Lifetime 11 podcast. Let me introduce my first ever guest on this podcast, Mr. Greg Kennedy. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tony.
Right, Greg. Greg's a jungle gym that I've known from my St. Andrews University network. There wasn't many of us.
You were Dundee at the time. You hadn't even graduated to St. Andrews yet.
I got there in the end. But you've been living in Australia for the best part of a decade. I've been living in Slovakia. I remember that the month before we both left Scotland, although you have since returned, we went to our last Celtic home game that we could go to. Yeah. And we got beat at home by Kilmarnock. Yeah. Killian Sheridan scoring a lovely goal.
He didn't quite have the full head of hair and the full beard at that point, but he was pretty close.
I always thought he was a decent player. But I do remember leaving Scotland thinking, oh, good, I'm glad to have this weight on my shoulders that is Celtic, you know, free from it. And then 3 weeks later, we beat Barcelona in the Champions League.
You know, Killian turned up in New Zealand playing in the A-League.
Did he tear it up there?
He was moving slower than you did. And he was still a standout.
And he was still good. All right, that's where I should have gone. Anyway, the objective of this podcast is for my guest to give us some easy listening and some daft nostalgia and something to argue about or occupy our minds when we're cycling or sitting in the office by providing us with his dream Celtic 11 that he saw in the flesh. And it's up to him what formation he chooses. What is your formation, Greg?
Yes, so I had two choices here. So I ended up with two teams. I had a 4-2-3-1, and then I had the 3-5-2. And on balance, we've gone with a 3-5-2.
So very Martin O'Neill-esque, or modern Neil Lennon-esque, potentially.
It's very, very heavily influenced by the Carling Cup Leicester City team that won.
So Steve Guppy's in the team.
Back in 98, there's a very Muzzy Is It inspired centre mid going on here.
Excellent. To prove your kudos as a real Celtic fan, what was your first Celtic game and who was your first Celtic hero?
My first Celtic game was the 1987-88 season, and still 2 points for a win back then. And we were at home to Dundee with about three or four games to go in the season, and this was the game that we could clinch the title. And I happened to be milling around Falkirk at the time, and my uncle, who was a season ticket holder, gave us a shout and said he was heading up to the game and the minibus, and they had a seat and where I wanted to go. And I said, yeah, well, bearing in mind I was only 10 years old at the time. And then neither of us chose to inform our parents, so I just disappeared off for a day to Glasgow. So anybody outside looking in, this random guy just walks up to a youngster says, do you want to come and get some into a minibus? And we disappear in the middle of nowhere. So, yeah, it was that was my first experience of going to Celtic Park. And I got lifted over the turnstile like everybody did into the old jungle. And Andy Walker scored two. And fabulous Chris Moss scored, I think, a bit of a belting goal. And I was a bit young to take it all in. But I realised that after the game that we clinched the league, I think we were favourites to win that league anyway. But, yeah, that was my first ever experience of going to Celtic Park, 1988.
Not a bad start.
A fantastic way to start, yeah.
And who was your first Celtic hero?
My first Celtic hero, looking back, you know, probably Darius Dobchek. So, you know, there was a lot of great Celtic players there. You know, I loved Brian McClair. I loved Andy Walker. I loved Frank McAvaney. These guys were all so quick. But I remember as I was learning a little bit more about football and watching a lot more about it, I just thought this guy, he was so exotic. And I loved Jackie Jackanowski at the same time, but he was just a bit of a fallback. So he was kind of hard to take into your hearts. But Dovcek stayed with us for so long, and he just had this great left boot on him. And again, he was this man from behind the Iron Curtain that we knew nothing about. He had this great name, and he could ping a ball with his left foot. And so he was probably my first hero. But I will admit to having a bit of a soft spot for Anton Rogan, but I don't tell anybody else that.
It's weird looking back. I think in hindsight, you obviously see certain things, but it was only when I was watching some video of the 1986 World Cup once, I saw that like Jackanowski was like Poland's striker.
Proper player. Yeah,
a proper player playing like a high level and being absolutely brilliant.
And having a proper body shape in 1986.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Discovered
Ching and Scottish women by that point, by all accounts. Anyway, so got those out the way. Now we'll get into your lifetime 11. Who will start at the back, obviously? Yeah, who's your goalkeeper?
So if you can imagine, so the span of this, from Davy Hay all the way to Neil Lennon, the two times, that's a lot of Celtic managers, a lot of different teams. So what I've done, three options that I considered as the goalkeeper.
You're only allowed to talk about the one you've picked.
Oh, you don't want to know about the three? Well, I'm going to tell you the three, then I'm only going to talk about the one I picked.
Okay.
So my three options for my 3-5-2 were Paddy Bonner, Artur Boric, and Fraser Forster. And my chosen goalkeeper is Mr. Artur Boric.
Okay, interesting.
I remember, now, again, not to piss off too many Celtic fans, Arthur wasn't actually that great a goalkeeper. he was just capable of moments of brilliance. And, you know, his mere presence just upset so many people on the other side of the town that it's hard to ignore his cultural significance. But I remember we were playing Spartak Moscow, and I think he saved a penalty in the game, and then he also saved us in the penalty shootout. And I think that this was just when we were starting to kind of rediscover a bit of form in Europe, you know, and I felt, you know, we signed a proper goalkeeper. And again, another one for a while had a really good body shape and that kind of slid for a wee while, but he just gave you that confidence. And I remember, you know, going to Ibrox, going to different places, and you thought when he was in the team, you weren't going to give away soft goals. But yeah, probably on balance, he's just meant the most to me as a Celtic goalkeeper in the last 30 years. I thought he's the one that's kind of really stuck in my mind. And I wouldn't be too shabby if we had a 27-year-old Artur Boric in the sticks.
Yeah, you definitely would. He must have been pretty young when we got him, eh? But I remember immediately thinking, this guy is the real deal.
Yeah, yeah. He's proper size, you know, good reflexes, commanded his box, and was not shy at telling everybody what to be getting on with. And he just got it. I think he just got the whole club in an instant. He got the ethos fed into his ego. You know, the pictures of him being on the stand with the Legia Warsaw fans. You know, you're just like, this is a guy that gets football. He gets what it's all about. And if he hadn't actually made it, you could imagine him being there banging the drum with the megaphone, leading the singing. So, yeah, probably gone through the Rab Douglas days, gone through the Jonathan Gould days, gone through the Sanchez Brotto days, and then Artur Boric turns up, and you're like, right, proper player.
And what would you single out as his greatest moment?
Football or non-football?
Non-football, anything. Whatever justifies him being in your team.
I thought his ability to antagonise the denizens of Ibrox was particularly poignant, just by his sheer existence. And I think I remember he uh, I remember he made a bit of a rick. I think Poland were maybe playing Northern Ireland.
Yes.
And he made a bit of a rick, and then they just gave him dog's abuse, and he just took it, and he was almost just, you know, his ability to bounce back was fantastic. And it was like water off a duck's back. He just spat in the gloves, held them up. But I do think back, probably the one moment that was brilliant was it the Louis Saha penalty save in the, in yeah. the Man United game.
Ronaldo deflects it. Oh, there's appeal for handball. Is there here? I think he's given a penalty, you know. Boris! Flying save from the pole. Louis Saha denied. Celtic are still in front. Dramatic finish here. Celtic on the verge of qualification.
Very soft penalty given against Maloney. And, you know, if they had scored, they would have topped the league. Didn't score, we topped that league. We qualified with a game to spare. No one quite, even STV missed it. It was just, yeah, I thought whenever we conceded a penalty, you always a better than 50% chance that Big Arthur's big hand, the paw, was going to get there. So, yeah, a couple of standout moments. But those, the Spartak Moscow and the Man United games stick in my head as being really just top, top moments as a goalkeeper.
So, moving on to our back three. I'm guessing three centre-halves, unless you've converted some midfielder in there or something.
No. I did look at that. Three centre-halves. So there's nine names, and we've ended up with three. So, and I did go for a bit of balance. So there's a lefty, there's a righty, and then there's a bit of a libero in there.
Right. I guess there's two ways to do this entire exercise. There's the, I want to pick a team that would actually go out and win. There's just 11 guys that I want to see, you know.
Yeah, this is not, God bless his soul. This is not a Tommy Burns 11. This is more of a pragmatic Martin O'Neill 11 that would not just win the league, but would have won in Seville.
Okay, so who's your man on the right?
So man on the right, so there was three choices. So there was Reaper, Bobo, or Mialbi, and I've gone with Mialbi.
Mialbi on the right.
Yeah, Johan, probably for no other reason than I thought he was the most beautiful man I've ever seen play football.
This is true. I remember the week after, because he signed for Celtic like the Friday afternoon. We beat Rangers 5-1 on the Saturday. And for some reason, I was in Glasgow the next week. And, I didn't live in Glasgow at the time. And I walked down the street one day and walked past Johan Mialbi and just always regretted not saying something to him. Do you know what I mean? I just looked at him in awe, like, wow, there's Johan Mialbi, you know? What an absolute mountain of a man.
It was just huge. And I remember loving the fact that Sweden just put him in the middle of midfield just to destroy anyone that came near him. And I remember an England game, and I think he must have took out about three or four of those guys in a row, and they just stopped going near him.
Ljungberg. And Henrik Larsson getting there with David Seaman starting to come off his line, thinking better of it. More pressure from Sweden. In goes up Mjölby! Sweden lead by 2-1. Johan Mjölby. Brilliant reactions. Absolutely brilliant. This guy's a centre-back, but those were the reactions of a top striker. So quickly did he react to the ball, springing up off of Paul Scholes. He was making it his again. Movement from Larsson's excellent. Look how deep England are again. So, so deep. And then when the ball comes in, they don't deal with it.
He was just like, he wasn't a wrecking machine because he didn't dive in recklessly. He was the kind of guy that people just bounced off. And I do admit, like, again, this is getting into the whole pre-Martin, post-Martin era. You know, as someone that, you know, would follow Celtic religiously pre-Martin O'Neill, when you look at his signings and you look at the kind of guys that were you know, he had come in, and then O'Neill came in afterwards, and then looked at who was strong in that unit that he had. And then you're like, right, yeah, I'm gonna add even more solidity to these guys. Now, this is not my three, but I remember Valgarin, Bobo, and Mialbi as a back three, and they just, it was like, you know, the Great Wall of China.
Yeah,
it was just immense. And you remember thinking back to the 90s, and you're like, I don't think we've ever had players that were that heavy and that big and that built, and, you know, to the point where Ramon Vega wasn't even the bloody biggest guy.
Yeah. In
the team. But, you know, I love Mialbi's athleticism. I just loved the minute, like, air ball. He could win anything in the air. He wasn't the best technically with the ball at his feet, despite being an international midfielder. But you know, he was really, really good. And I think the only time I kind of fell out a little bit was when, for some reason, we allowed bloody Peter Lovenpants to run all over him.
Coming in for that.
Yeah, yeah. After bloody Ekmaclish figured out that, you know, you play a front three against a back three, and then they just went out wide, and we just couldn't cover those spaces. But yeah, for most of the rest of the time, I just thought Nialbi was a proper signing, and he was just a proper player. And you always felt there was very difficult to score against when we had that iron curtain as a back three.
He popped up with the odd goal as well, didn't he? He scored a big late winner against Dundee once.
He had a few in him. He had a bit of a schlack of a shot on him. And he was always obviously good in the opposition's box. And, you know, just seeing that big blonde hair. You saw the camera in the tunnel at Celtic Park, especially in Champions League games. And I just remember some of the guys would walk along and they would just look at these guys and they'd be like, man, but I could just imagine that's what Anil was looking for. He was looking for that psychological edge.
Yeah.
I'm trying to admit, I think Chris Sutton was O'Neill's first signing, but I think Val Haren was not long after that.
Yeah, it must have been.
And that was a big signal to a lot of us that, yeah, this was going to be land of the giants. So that this was not going to be a little tippy-tappy football anymore. This guy had a plan. He knew what we were going to do. And yeah, you got, you know, guys like Mialbi just absolutely rose to the challenge.
Yeah, definitely. So who's your man in the middle next to him?
Man in the middle next to him. So I had three choices there. I know you don't like me doing my three choices, but Stubbs, Mulgrew, or Virgil. So a bit of an easy win. I loved Mulgrew. I loved Stubbs, but Virgil is probably hand on heart, probably next to Blessed Henrik, probably the best footballer I've seen us play. Just cruise control, just ran through the matches. You know, it was like watching a guy from sixth year play against the second years at school.
Yeah.
He could just walks up the pitch. Don't think, like, again, if I'm being hypercritical, wasn't the best positionally, but didn't have to be in our league. You know, his pace was sublime. His touch was great. The price we got him at was an absolute steal. Probably my best memory of Virgil was when that cup semi-final against New Rangers. And I don't, was it Andy Halliday or Ryan?
No, Jack, it was some wee bald guy.
Holt or something. Oh yeah, sorry, yeah. It was the wee guy that used to play with Motherwell, and he just bounced off him like you'd invited your little brother to come and make up the numbers, and he just bounced off him. Yeah, he was just, and I thought him and that year with him and Denier, it was absolutely smooth, plain sailing. So I think, yeah, probably guided by what he's going on to do. But yeah, Virgil in the middle, I thought with, as a ball-playing libero, I don't think we've had a better one in a long, long time. And I don't think we'll have a better one. Virgil easily makes it into that best team I've ever seen.
Yeah, he was, it's one of those absolute mysteries. He was just clearly too good. You know, everyone says that now, but I remember seeing it at the time.
You could see it in the first couple of games, and you're just wondering, you know, who at Groningen thought £2 million.
Yeah, let's take the money.
So, yeah.
Moving to the left side of our back three, who completes your defence? Left side,
someone who's actually close to potentially my favourite ever Celt, Tom Boyd.
Right.
Tom Boyd. So I remember Tom Boyd, we got him on I think it was an exchange for Tony Cascarino.
Yeah.
So immediately, the best deal ever. Getting anything for Tony was fantastic. So he came up for Chelsea. And my initial memories of him, he played a lot left back. And it was later on in his career, he moved into that kind of left-sided defence. And for me, the reason I love Tom Boyd so much is he spanned the Martin O'Neill era. So he sort of was the club captain. He carried it with him. Martin O'Neill came in, got the best out of him. But obviously my favourite memory of Tom Boyd was Wim Jansen's season. You know, just being part of that team that lifted that trophy. That was a heartache season for all of us. You look back at the results, it was topsy-turvy. It was not going well. Even down to that very last day at home against St Johnston, and Brat Pack finally turns up. And Boyd would just cruise through those games later in his career. And then actually watching him lift the trophy was fantastic. And you know, I remember him for Mr. Smell the Glove. So the Tom, I just thought, as an ambassador, you could see he was well respected by his teammates. He'd played at a high level. You know, he'd scored an own goal for Scotland, which is always fun. I didn't let it phase him. And again, I reckon he could have kept on playing. He was just a bit of a Rolls Royce of a player. You know, probably, you know, injury and age caught up with him in the end. But I always felt we got more than our money's worth out of him. He never complained. He did his job. Probably the kind of player every manager wishes they could inherit. He was the, not quite same positionally, but he was the James Milner of his day. You know, just he had that great engine. He could get up and down the pitch. We still played him fucking win back when he was in his mid-30s. You know, he still had a crack at it. And yeah, he was Mr. Celtic for me in that pre-post Martin O'Neill era. And I think Martin O'Neill recognised it as well, that he was still a big part of his squad, and he still got a bit out of him.
He sort of spans the era where I go from being a, you know, a child not really knowing what's happening, all the way to the point where, you know, has an idea, you know. I was always aware that, you know, he was holding down a place in the Scotland teams that were qualifying for tournaments. He was big and he was quick. You know, he didn't score goals or anything, but he was just utterly reliable.
Good recovery pace, and yeah, you could play him in. Yeah, I think he obviously filled out a little bit as he got older. You know, he was never the tallest, but yeah, he very rarely got done. And yeah, just I thought he was just a proper player.
And as Celtic fans who've lived overseas, we you know, he's the star of Celtic TV.
We rely on him for he doesn't let us down on old Celtic TV.
He shouts penalty more than we do. So big fans of TV as a player and as a commentator. Moving out of the fence.
You've got Boyd, Virgil, and Mialbi. Great.
I like the fact. Because there's two, obviously, I mean, we get blasé, we, you know, in recent times, we've got blasé about putting five past the Hun or the Zombies. But in the old days, I literally have a 6-2 t-shirt and a 5-1 t-shirt. You know, I literally bought the t-shirt, and you've picked two veterans of both those games, Mialbi and Boyd, which does give them a kudos that maybe younger Celtic fans can't even comprehend.
I think people forget that in that 6-2 game, Rod Wallace could have scored 5 goals. You know, we absolutely blew them away. But up until that goal went in, you know, that last goal, you know, I remember watching it, and I was just like, I'm nervous here. You know, we've scored these goals, but I'm proper nervous. And then when the final goal went in with a few minutes to go, you're like, right, let's take a step back. And that was the benchmark. You know, old Chris Sutton were here to put them in their place. They called it, they did it. I mean, to me, that was the Babe Ruth pointing to the home run. You know, this is what we're going to do. We're up here to forget the fact we lost the next one 5-1. But
I would always argue that they put 5 past us when Thompson had got sent off.
Yes.
Whereas Barry Ferguson gets sent off in the 6-2 at 5-2.
Yeah. The game was already
done. So I'd say it was slightly different. The 5-1 was always a bit of a skew. What I always loved about the 5-1, if you can love anything about losing to the Rangers 5-1, was that O'Neill had come up from England with this, you know, reputation as a hothead.
Yeah.
And the commentators were just dreaming of that moment where he was going to flip. Yeah. And that was the day where, you know, they walk off, we've lost 5-1, and the first question of O'Neill was like, I don't know, you should have got a penalty or something. And O'Neill just dialed it in, was just like, all right, you know, fine, doesn't matter. And he kept that rocket hidden away until the Juventus game the next autumn. Then he exploded. Anyway, thoroughly justified. But yeah, he did. He played the media so well, and that day didn't snap, which I was really pleased with. Anyway, moving into midfield.
On the right-hand side, Mr. Didier Gat. Again, a complete nonsensical signing. Martin saw something in him. You know, he was running up, he was running about up front for Hibs, you know, just a complete machine. Big body, big unit, you know, not the best technically, and you could see that. I still don't know if he thought he was buying him as a wing back, or he just thought, this guy can run, I'm buying him, he's coming in. I actually do, the one thing I hold against the guy is O'Neill tried to repeat the trick with Ulrich Larsson and David Fernandez. It didn't quite work. But, you know, getting a guy in, and then obviously the standout moment away to Ajax.
First 2 SPL games. Larsson. Drilled ball to Agat. He's away from Shivu. Didier Agat has scored! It's 2-0 Celtic. 19 minutes gone. Superb pass from Larsson. Then it was down to sheer pace and precision on the finish. Grimm beaten for a second time.
Oh, again, great striking partnership. Sutton, wonderful layoff. Larsson is inch perfect into Gat's feet, and what wonderful pace to get in front of the defender, and a very composed finish. What a wonderful goal. Here we see him again, great pace, lifts his head, knows where he's going to put it, side foots it across the goalkeeper, and it's safely into the back of the net.
Real quality as well on that volleyed pass from Henrik Larsson, and then Shivu was a beaten man. You could see it in his face there. He just couldn't catch Agat. He had him for pace.
It was just crazy. You know, for years you've been saying, right, get a proper athlete in there, a guy that can run all day. And in many ways that made a rod for his own back, because he'd done that and he'd done it a few times. Now all of a sudden, that entire front three rows of the main stand at Celtic Park expected every time he got the ball, he was going to not give the guy a 20-yard start, and then Carroll lose his way past him.
Yeah.
For a while, I had my seat was only about three rows back from the halfway line, and the guys around about me, they just used to give him dog's abuse because he was not doing what he'd done in Ajax. So, and you're like, guy's plenty of shape, he's doing what he's told. But yeah, I thought, again, just back to Martin O'Neill's era, you're like, Martin O'Neill had a vision, he had a shape, and he was buying players to play in a system, play in a shape. He was not buying players just because of their reputation. And you know, for $50,000, you know, it's probably pound for pound as good a purchase as we've made in 30 years. Really, really, really good value out of him.
I think the people that got angry with a guy, which, you know, some of the times it was me probably, were people that played a lot of video games. Do you know what I mean? And when you're playing FIFA or PES, yeah, you just give the ball to the fast guy, press R2, and bang, you go. And to be fair, on his good day, that's what he did.
He did, and he had, don't think it was deliberate, but he had this Beckham-esque sweeping cross in him that he would hit one out of five times. He would knock it by the guy. He wouldn't take it to the byline, but he'd probably be just short of the 18-yard line, and he would just hit this big banana cross, and Henrik would get on the end of it, and everyone would be like, we'll just do that.
Yeah.
Obviously, half the time it's shanking out or going elsewhere. But when he got it, he hit it at such pace, because he was going at pace. The defenders couldn't get it. It was just such a great move for us. But you know, there's a reason you're playing at Hibs. If you can do that, you know, you're not playing at that level. And again, the reason what I liked about it is he was a guy, bit of a journeyman, came into a system, came into a team, and was kind of reschooled and retooled in how to play. And he did it fabulously well, very, very effective. And I can't, for a number of years there, I don't think any of us could imagine a team sheet where his name was not on it. It was an absolute standout for us.
It's a weird one, because like I say, I would have been one of the guys that was asking the questions about, you know, why can't he cross? But then you watch back now, Thompson's header at Bayern,
yeah,
Larsson's header v Porto, Sutton's, yeah, header at Ajax. Do you know what I mean? They're all the same ball. They're all that ball.
So it's all that kind of dipping, almost like topspin on that cross.
Yeah.
And again, I think it was just pure. He was, I'm not even sure he meant it. He just thought, I'm swinging my boot at this as hard as I can. And he caught it just right. So
he definitely had no left foot at all. He was comical trying to use his weaker foot. But he got away with it. I mean, he really was a top, top class right back. You know, right, yeah, wing back, come right, yeah, back. Because he ended up playing in the back of the four at the back, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he ended up playing in the four at the back, and then obviously he kept going into Strachan's era as well. So
as fast or faster than anyone we've ever had. Nobody was a gap fast. That was,
when you watched him run, he wasn't like one of those guys with the Chiefs buck out and, you know, and the hands are going. He just cruised, and then he just got up to that kind of light speed and just kept going. Obviously, half the time he red blinkered it right out the other end. But you can't have everything. So no, an absolute gem of a find. Yeah, get it. He for my 3-5-2 shape that I've got in mind,
he's definitely got to be there. Right. But so
huge honourable mention to Jackie Mack, who was my favourite right back. If we'd went for the four at the back, Jackie Mack would have been in as a right back.
Right. Okay. This is getting chopped out. okay. So moving in, are you going to one of your defensive midfielders or two?
We'll jump across, left wing back.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll jump straight across. Three great players, one absolute standout. It's got to be our man, KT. He's just, I thought Tierney was Mr. Celtic. He came into the team. I reckon you could play him anywhere you liked. I was convinced he was going to be our Gareth Bale. I thought we were going to start him at left back. Then all of a sudden he was going to go forward. I remember when he scored that 40-yard pile driver, I thought, right, he's going to start trying scissor kick volleys from the edge of the box.
Tierney's in the middle of the park. He's got options on his left-hand side.
Oh, what a goal! The captain scored! Oh, wonderful strike from Kieran Tierney. It's 4-0.
I told you, once he get involved, he was itching to get involved. Didn't think it would... With a magnificent strike from Kieran Tierney.
No, I think probably in my lifetime watching Celtic, probably the best product that's come out of the Celtic youth team. I did catch the tail end of McStay and watched a bit of McStay, so still top player. But in terms of watching a guy come into a team for a young end to becoming a mainstay, to becoming a captain, yeah, I think he's had the whole Celtic journey. And then he's made us a shit ton of money to boot. You know, so you can't really ask for a better Celtic journey. And I think we got enough out of him. We probably overplayed him as a youngster. But I think from what he did through the Delia years, and then, you know, getting the invincible season out of him, I just think he's been a proper left back, then left wing back, and you could play him anywhere. And I actually think he's going to end up being a centre back for Scotland. It won't surprise me if Stevie Clark shoehorns him in at left centre back and have the Liverpool fellow on the left of him.
Fingers crossed for me that Tierney's Celtic story isn't finished. You know, I don't expect to see him anytime soon, but for me. He's welcome back anytime.
If he makes a bit of coin, wins a trophy or two, yeah, he might think, you know, he might do the Tom Boyd story and come back and be that player. Now, just pray to God his injuries clean up. You know, watch him play last night. He's still typical Tierney. After 12 minutes, he's limping and grimacing, but you know he'll just keep going for the next 90 minutes. But I reckon he's still got heights to reach in his career. I did say to my Arsenal mate that if Tierney stays fit, he'll be the captain within 12 months quite easily.
Yeah, that's what I was telling folk as well.
Yeah,
I loved the minute he was in the team as a kid. He was that guy that just wasn't pulling out of tackles.
He was wiry, he was built, he just moved with such purpose, you know, good touch. And then he just, some of the crosses, you know, the goals against Man City, you know, he would just give you 110% every week. And when you look at the highlights reel that the Arsenal fans put together when he was moving to them, it was an absolute standout. And yeah, like easily best, although if he doesn't come back to us, I think Cal Mac might end up usurp that title as the best ever home produced player. And I'm doing a disservice to Jimmy Forrest there. You know, he'll end up the most decorated. But
what would you say was Tierney's finest moment, if you picked one out?
Turning back up at the stadium, missing teeth, having gone to hospital, and then coming back to lift the trophy. I think, you know, that was Mr. Celtic. Every generation has always had someone that the fans identify with, that just gets it, and he's been there since. And my second favourite moment was the picture of him on holiday wearing the centenary top for Christmas. So that's dedication, that when a guy goes on holiday, he still wears his own. He'd be loving COVID-19 right now, because he would just wear his training top all day. He'd turn up to training, he wouldn't even go for a bath, he would just go to sleep in it and he'd come back the next day.
I'd be loving it now. He's an Adidas guy, isn't he? Yeah. So he'll have all the new stuff getting sent down to London.
Yeah. And he's got, do you know, he's got a proper man's haircut now as well. He's got the proper side stripe. They've obviously had the club barber in there giving him a short back and sides. He's one step away from being a Peaky Blinder when you look at that haircut.
That show's massive over here. Slovaks love the Peaky Blinders. Spaniards love Peaky Blinders. Everyone in the world loves Peaky Blinders.
Yeah, it's a good show.
Ugh, it's just a poor man's BBC Boardwalk Empire, isn't it? Declared war on all the Peaky Blinders fans.
So Mr. Tierney, one say Mr. Agat and the other, what a balance. Pace, power. Again, you're noticing a bit, the team's got a bit of size about it.
Yeah, this team's, Martin O'Neill's picking this team.
I picked this team to win in Seville.
This team would win, this team would go deep in the Champions League, which takes us to the most important position, because you can't have a team without centre mids. So how many defensive? How cynical have you been? Two and a one?
It's a two and a one. One, probably one of the roles is defensive and one's a bit more free, and then there's a free role in front. So it's a two and a one. Yeah. So probably, that's what we've got. So do you want all three names, or do you want the
option? I want your defensive one first.
My defensive one, Scott Brown. So it was a toss-up between him and Big Victor, but on a longevity factor, you can't not have Scott Brown. He's he's an era-defining player for us. You know, I still know there's plenty of Celtic fans don't always, you know, have him as, you know, and he gets plenty of stick when we don't play well. But when you just look at the sheer longevity, what he's been through, the player he's become, he now is Mr. Celtic. And when you listen to Virgil talk, you listen to all the players that's left us, they all talk about he is that cohesive unit that makes it work. And I think people forget that senior pros and experienced pros go a long way off the pitch to making sure a club functions properly. And yeah, his sheer will to win and the fact that he's been able to augment his game over the years and he dropped a little bit deeper and he's still covering the ground. Yeah, can't, for my lifetime watching Celtic and what he's achieved and what we've done in the last 10 years, you can't not have Scott Brown in your 11. It would be criminal not to.
I don't disagree at all. I think I've asked questions about him at times. In terms of Europe, I think he could have done more. But largely, it was due to disappointment, because I think he could have been a better player at a higher level, which, you know, at times he was, at times he wasn't. But in terms of just being there and just dominating the league, dominating Scottish football, I love the guy. And go a little bit personal. When we lost the league in 2011, the day we lost the league, I knew a guy that knew a guy, and I got invited to that pub in the West End where the players were all hanging out after the game. You know, sort of commiseration party, basically. And I remember Scott Brown. I was at the bar, and Scott Brown, like, you know, sort of, you know, I wasn't doing the sycophant celebrity thing. You know, I made eye contact, and he just said to me, "Are you with so and so?" You know, the guy that knew the guy. And I was like, "Yeah, yeah." And then he paid for my drinks. You know, and it was just class. Do you know what I mean? He didn't have to.
He
was just there doing that. And I bet he's been doing that for a decade.
And again, he's growing into his role. He's had some fantastic performances. And you just think of the, how many charlatans has he seen off the premises from across the road? You know, all these mouths that come out, the Joey Bartons of the world and whoever else, and the Nico Cranchars and all these other fucking has-beens that these guys drag out.
So much was made of your battle with Joey Barton in the build-up to this. How was it out there?
Easy, yeah, it's fine. Wasn't a problem, there's no battling whatsoever. I think it was more media. I made no issue whatsoever.
Do you feel you got the better of them then, certainly given the scoreline?
I think the scoreline talks for itself. I think at the end of the day, it shows you how it was pretty much men versus boys at the end of the day. But we're a great team, we're very, very close together, and I think it showed you again out in the park.
What did you say to him when Celtic scored the second goal? You seemed to have a quick chat.
I was just making sure he was alright.
And was he?
I think so.
He's been Mr. Scottish football for a decade now, and he's still the standard. He's still the guy that people look up to. And you won't know this reference, Tony, but anyone that's spent time in Australia will know there's a rugby league has so many great players, but there's this one guy, Cameron, who's been the captain of Queensland. He's been a captain in Melbourne for so long. At 35, he's just getting better and better and better. He's just set the standards every year, and he reminds me so much of Bruni. He's just like, he's the player that opposition fans love to hate, because he knows every trick in the book. He knows how to get inside every referee's head. He's seen off every other hooker over the years, and that's what Bruni reminds me of. He's effectively Scottish football royalty now, and he will be when he retires. And even to the point I heard the other day, the players are saying he should come back and play for Scotland. You know, he's although I think that was Robert Snodgrass saying that, so I think he's just a bit gone off a cliff these days. But no, I reckon Brownie's had a fabulous career with us, and pound for pound, you know, that was, you think back, everyone was cool over us, you know, Kevin Thompson's the better player, you know, time judges all men, and no one's going to be better judged than Brownie and what he's done. And, you know, hand on heart, he's going to be the 10 in a row captain, so he will be up there with Billy McNeil in our history books. Quite easily.
Yeah, there'll be a statue of Brown one day. I was at his last game for Hibs, and it was that brilliant one where a couple of weeks before, the Huns had played away at Hibs, and they'd all been singing,
signing for us,
signing for us, shite. But then it had been announced by that the last game of the season when we played the Hibs, and he scored against us, and it was just the whole Celtic end at Easter Road singing, "That's why we are buying him, that's why we are buying him." It was absolutely brilliant. And it was just so cool that he turned up that day and just destroyed us. You know,
he just dominated it. Yeah, he did. And actually, I remember him doing it at Celtic Park as well. I think there's a game. I don't know if Hibs won it or if we got out of jail free at the end of the, but like, there was him, I think Ivan Sproul was playing for Hibs and he was playing, he just dominated. I think he was only a young fella.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do remember old Derek Johnston, you know, crowing about Bruni and KT, you know, coming to play under Uncle Walter. And yeah, that was a good one for us to get in the door. Yeah. Yeah. And like I say, value for money.
Another thing people forget is his second season. It's one of the great forgotten seasons. And frustratingly, it's the one that I went to every single game because I had just moved from Edinburgh to Glasgow, largely just to watch the Celts. You know, we'd just done three in a row under Strachan. I moved to Glasgow and then we lost three in a row. But folk forget that that first three in a row, that first year of the Rangers three in a row, Scott Brown won Scottish Player of the Year.
He
dominated the games. You know, he just completely ran the show. Scored a few goals that season and was damn good, you know. So your next one.
Next one. Sit alongside him, but not as defensive, the maestro. So I was fortunate enough to get, you know, I got to see quite a bit of him. Obviously, I didn't get him in his early 80s pomp. But yeah, I even remember him like scoring against. Now, you'll know this. So what did the CCCP play under when Scotland beat them at the Euros? I think they were
CIS. The Commonwealth of Independent Soviet Republics.
And Scotland won that game, but again, we didn't qualify, and McStay scored. My most vivid memories of McStay were the old oxygen chamber under I think this was in McCann's, and then McCann was offering a sort of pay-as-you-play deal. But yeah, I do remember when he was it Udinese or Sampdoria that were chasing his signature? So
it was Udinese, wasn't it? I thought it was Juventus.
Oh, it was, I don't think it was what them, it was, and he came close to leaving, but obviously he stayed. But I've met him a couple of times in Australia.
Right.
Because he was living out there, and I've been to some sportsmen's dinners and tried to tempt him up to come in, run some senior soccer sessions for him. He would have still been the best player. But he's just as humble as he ever was. And he got up to speak in front of everybody and he spoke very well. But, you know, he's just still a very, very humble wee guy. And I remember sitting next to him and like the Aussies I was with had no idea this was Paul McStay. They knew he was a very famous player. And I'm sort of sitting there sort of giggling away myself saying, it's Paul McStay. So I took a picture of his business card and was sent, you know, texting it back here to everybody saying, because actually his business was Maestro Sports.
Right.
So he had like a training, so he'd done training apps and all this stuff. But you know, as a player, I just loved that little pivot turn that he had. You know, he could take the ball under pressure. And that great, great goal that we scored.
Abercrombie. McGrain. Ronan McLeod. Barnes. No question about it, Celtic are certainly playing like champions. Archdeacon testing Tom Wilson. Makes his way to the byline, here's Gordon McLeod, now McStay. 4-0 to Celtic. Paul McStay thundering in goal number 4. And it was down to the creative play of Archdeacon on the left. Now look at the way he gets away from Wilson, holds off the challenge. How about this? The thunderous finish. Stuart never moved.
It was that little pivot turn that he had, you know, that ability to take the ball under pressure, and he knew whether he dropped left, dropped right. And but I wasn't old enough to appreciate everything that he did. But, you know, thinking back to that, you know, winning that cup final against Airdrie, you know, having gone all those years without a trophy. You know, a lot of us that, you know, we'd grown up through that 90s era and we'd grown used to this middling to nothing, you know, getting that trophy in. And then it's probably, he was a great player. And for a long, long time, I would have said he was my favourite player as I was growing up. And then I saw more other players as I was going on. But yeah, I look back on some of the, you know, some of the games that we played and some fabulous play, like him playing with Charlie Nicholas, playing with Brian McClair, you know, just they looked amazing, but again, didn't have the shape and the structure that we became used to once into the 2000s. But yeah, probably poison balance. I can see why like my uncles and my dad eulogise over him. He was just a fabulous player. So again, any dream Celtic 11 of mine, he's wearing number 8 and he's the captain, not Scott Brown.
Right. I think that's a fair choice. Maybe just because he came through the academy, you know, one of our own sort of element.
Bruni will do his job, but, you know, as talking about Mr. Celtics, you've got Tierney and Boyd in there. For me, growing up, it was Roy Aitken and it was him. You know, Roy Aitken was Mr. Yeah. Celtic, McStay was Mr. Celtic, and you know, when I even when we were having dinner, I couldn't. He got pissed off because I kept calling him Mr. McStay. I'm like, I'm not worthy to call you Paul. I'm never calling you Paul. You're Mr. McStay.
I do remember one day just sitting on Sucky Hall Street. You know, there's that shitey little market, indoor market, halfway up Sucky Hall Street. I don't think I've ever been in it. Anyway, I was sitting reading a book on a bench out there. I must be waiting for someone. And Paul McStay walked past me. This is like, you know, just 10 years ago. So he's probably based in Australia at the time, but for whatever reason. And I just remember looking at him like, you know, it was genuinely like looking at a god.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
just the realization that, I mean, half the people in the vicinity seem to know. I mean, maybe they all knew who he was. But yeah. I just remember, just like, imagine, you know, this guy's an absolute legend. Right. And he's good for a goal. So, but who's your man in front of him?
Controversial here because Moravchuk doesn't make it despite being an absolute genius. In front of those two, John Collins, JC. Absolute class in a glass. I'm forgetting the whole Fergus, you know, give us money to Monaco type thing. And I'm forgetting the fact that he became Mr. Motivator later in his life and challenged people to press ups. I just remember,
well,
you know,
challenging again, Scott Brown to press ups, wasn't it? Are they going to work well together?
Was it sit ups or like? But remember though, you know, again, defining moment probably for loads of people with JC was the outside of the boot free kick at Ibrox, you know, pointing up to old Jerry McNee in the box.
And then now Celtic have got a free kick in a dangerous position.
Well, after Rangers' positive start, Celtic have been coming more and more into this match. And I think they sense a vulnerability in this Rangers defence. Mistakes are being made, and one of them leading to this free kick. And the referee wants the Rangers defence involved to retreat just a bit more. Celtic could really silence this huge crowd here. It's Collins. It's a magnificent goal by John Collins. 29 minutes gone here at Ibrox. Rangers 0, Celtic 1. And really self-inflicted wounds by Rangers, giving away the free kick. But what a mighty strike by Collins right into the top corner.
Yeah, well, we're half expecting the Dovcek thunderbolt there. But Collins steps up and flights this beautifully into the top right-hand corner. And the goal greeted by deafening silence here at Ibrox.
We were living on scraps. You know, there was not a lot going for us then. But he was just a class act for us, for Scotland. You could tell he was a proper baller. And he's the kind of, you almost wish McStay and Collins had been 5 years younger to kind of come with us into that more modern era that I remember. But yeah, it's for those years in the 90s taking abuse from the Rangers fans that I knew and had grown up with, you still had that little, you know, little light in you. You were like, yeah, we've still got some real class acts in there, and they kind of they've got a strong place in my heart from seeing us through those dark times, just having proper footballers there. And yeah, I thought even when he played for Scotland, he was an absolute class act. And then he obviously went on and upwards in his career with like Monaco and then on to Fulham and Everton and those places. But yeah, I thought he was a genuine European class player. Yeah, I thought he could have left us earlier and went anywhere. And again, a bit of a snip at a million. And it's surprising if you think how long he stayed at Hibs. He was a really, really good player, but gave Hibs nearly five full seasons. And then before coming and giving us plenty of football as well. But yeah, that was a tough one. I've got, you know, Lubo was an absolute magician. But, you know, this is a team that needs to move, a team that needs to run. Not got a lot of room for Lubo in that one. So John Collins would be my tip of the spear.
You know, I'm glad you picked him, just to give me an excuse to talk about him. Because, like I say, I'm 3 years younger than you. So although I witnessed all the same McStay that you witnessed, I never saw McStay in his pomp, really. I certainly don't remember it. Whereas I'm coming into an age where I'm very aware of Celtic and I'm following the results. And Collins is the, you know, like that shining light in The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings, that it's all we've got at this point. We are absolutely donkey meat. And there's this one guy that keeps going to Ibrox and just bludgeoning them.
Just as it is. He was the counterbalance to the Andy Paytons of the world, it was a class act. And then I like the fact
that there's folks slightly older than us that will always say, "Oh, McStay was better than Collins," and there'll be folk younger than us that have no idea how Collins was. Yeah. But yeah, we are that sweet spot where we are Collins fundamentalists.
Yeah, we're the Nirvana generation. And yeah, Collins very much, it kind of was almost, I wouldn't say pushed McStay out of the team, but you could see McCann was sort of, you know, the reason they wanted to put McStay on a pay-as-you-play deal, because he thought he was getting more out of these guys. But yeah, you just think you'd love to have seen them in a bit more of a successful Celtic team, and it wasn't their fault. But yeah, just, you always going to Ibrox, you thought Collins has got something in him. Absolute class act.
He's the kind of guy I would have hoped would have come back and been a great Celtic manager. And the closest we got was that he was, you know, he was Dyla's number two, which was cool. It's a shame that, I don't know, he's never managed after Hibs. He did a good job and then he chucked that.
I'm speculating here, Tony, but he seems to have a touch of the Glenn Hoyles about him. Almost too good a player to be a manager. You know, the difference between setting standards and allowing people to lift up to those standards. You know, good managers don't have to be the best player in a team. Good managers don't have to be the most knowledgeable guy in a team. Good managers have to get the best out of the instruments, and, you know, they've got to conduct an orchestra. And I just wonder if there's... He went off... Learned a lot about himself. He learned a lot about European culture. He learned a lot about how to stay fit and get the most out of your career. So he was probably good that way. But actually inspiring people to run through brick walls for him, there seems to just be a gap there that he wasn't able to close, which would allow you to become that manager. You know, because certainly tactically, there's probably very little anyone could teach him. He's seen it, been it, done it. And, you know, John Tagana rated him very, very highly and used to bounce technical and tactical ideas off him. So it's a strange one.
I love that he was a sort of reverse Lambert, in that, you know, Lambert shuffled out of Motherwell, did it in Europe and came back a superstar for Celtic. Collins left the star and then justified it, you know, went and won a French title and then went to a World Cup and did well. He really carried Scotland on his shoulders back then.
Easily. Yeah, it was him and Craig Burley were the only people, you know, they kept Scotland going. They effectively gave them a fighting chance in that tournament. But JC, you know, great initials. And
right. Okay, now we're up top. We're interesting. I mean, I'm just going to tell you, I'm guessing Larson's there.
Larson's there. So it's a big man, wee man combination.
Ah, but who's the big man? There's so many options.
So the three options were Pierre, Dembele, or Sutton.
And which one have you chosen?
Chris Sutton.
So classic Sutton-Larson partnership.
And not just because they played so well together and they were so effective in a 3-5-2. Again, I thought Sutton was a transformational signing for us. He came up with an attitude. He'd been denigrated down south. You know, he'd been Sutton Shearer had been a big, big thing. He was a proper player, scored a lot of goals, had a bit of size about him. This whole England B team thing seemed to haunt him down there. Didn't really kick on at Chelsea. Martin O'Neill, he made a beeline for him, and he thought, "Yep, you're going to come up here and you're going to boss this place." I just thought his touch, his grace under pressure, his elbows, his ability to be a street fighter was great. And, you know, I have previously said to you that DiCanio scored the best goal I've ever seen live, but probably Sutton's is up there, the chip against Klos.
Of course, is the only Rangers player to have scored against Celtic this season, Thompson, in his own form too. Chris Sutton holds off Frank de Boer and wins the Old Firm match in the first minute of stoppage time. The ball just up in the air. It's Larson to Sutton. He's onto it. He's strong. And he knows exactly what he's doing. Tips it over the top. It's Kevin Klos giving the Rangers goalkeeper absolutely no chance of saving it. You've got to say it's a tremendous goal from Sutton.
When he just leaned on De Boer, it was 0-0. You know, I was a couple of rows away from them. They're celebrating a 0-0 like they've won the league, you know, and he just puts on the little lean, hits the dink, and runs away like Tardelli, and it was just a beautiful, beautiful goal. But all the way through that, even big in European games, that little front post flick header that he had for one of the defenders coming through, you could see we were starting, you know, we'd become a proper team, we'd worked on things, we had a shape, we had a structure. And when you've got Henrik, you know, like possibly, you know, obviously best player I've ever seen live. You're trying to get the best out of him. And I thought O'Neill built a shape and a team that got that gave Henrik the platform to go above and beyond and do what he did. And I just thought Sutton was the perfect foil and chipped in with a fair good few goals, even the year after Henrik left, and we had Sutton and Sutton and Hartson up front for a while. It was hard to watch. I do remember we were 0-0 with Dundee United in that season near Christmas, and I just left. I actually went over to the Forge, and I went into like a Next furniture shop or something. The guy says, "Can I help you with?" And I said, "I just need to sit down." He's like, "Why?" I'm like, "I can't tell. It was just so hard to watch." Now you'd gone from this. And it was that, I think it was Martin's last season when we were running on empty.
Yeah.
I can't even remember who got in. Was it Mo Camara or, but it had been Sutton and Hartson up front. And it was a turgid game. It was freezing. And it's the one and only time I just remember saying, I'm out, I'm done. I just sat there. It ended up fucking buying a chair I didn't need.
But even that season, you mentioned Mo Camara. Remember that the Larsen Barcelona game?
Yeah.
Sutton's goal in that game was brilliant. You know, Class. Mo Camara pushed it down the right, whipped in a weird ball, and Sutton just didn't give up on it. He stretched.
He got something on it, yeah. He's got that right paw of his just came out of there, and. And yet, strangely, one of my favourite memories of Sutton was playing at the back at Ibrox, and I thought he just strolled through that game. And I reckon he had another 2-3 seasons of him as a centre-back easy if he wanted it. Now, we couldn't have afforded to keep him. You know, he was on a big, big wedge with us.
Yeah.
You know, so you wouldn't have been having an early 30s centre-back on 35, 40 grand a week, whatever he was on. But I do remember, I thought he can, if he so wished, he could have done that. He could have played out.
To an extent, I mean, the Lovenkranz game, for me, it always exposed the reality that, you know, a good player can go and play centre-half if he wants. Relatively speaking, we both did it. You know, we were guys that played centre-mid at a certain level, and then when we dropped back, it was a piece of piss, really. Unless you're up against a wee fast guy.
Yeah.
Who just does you. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, he'd have got away with that. But in Europe, it might not have worked. And, you know, if you come up against a young Stephen Fletcher or something like that, he might have got the runaround or something. So I see your point. But, yeah, my frustration with Sutton was always that Hartson existed. I loved Hartson.
Yeah.
I always thought the fact he was there was to the detriment of Sutton's Celtic career, which was awesome. But he could have scored hundreds.
I think, what was the game where O'Neill pulled him back to play behind Hartson and Larsson? Was that a Blackburn away?
Yes.
Where he played him, and he kind of played him as a kind of midfield. Yeah, he played, and we just, the team kind of worked its socks off around him.
Yeah.
And he ran, and like, you didn't want to do that to him, because Hartson was a great, great player for us and scored a lot of goals, but he didn't have the link play that Sutton did. I always thought Sutton was the superior player.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't make it in a 4-2-3-1, obviously, because Henrik is everybody's chosen striker. But one of the reasons that I went for the 3-5-2 is I thought I can't not have a Sutton Larsson combo. For all the football I've seen from Davy Hay to Neil Lennon now, watching those two up front was class. And I think one of my regrets is we didn't get to see Dumbelli and Eddie do that.
Yeah.
You know, so obviously had fallen out with Brendan. I don't think they would have been at the same. I think they probably would have scored more goals between the two of them. But I think of the level Eddie's reached and how good Dembele was. You'd had a Dembele Eddie with Griffiths waiting in the wings. You could have built a European team around those two up front. They would have gone really, really well. And yeah, for whatever reason, and you know, history's come back to prove the fella right. But yeah, I thought that was a missed opportunity. But probably Dembele probably was the only one that would have given Sutton a run for his money. But I think Dembele was an out and out. I'm the front man. I don't think he'd like to have been a foil for anybody. Whereas Sutton, he'd done it with Shearer, he'd done it with Larsson. He just knew how those boys operated. He knew how to get the most out of them. And very. He was almost like a very, very physical. Just Terry Sheringham, you know, just had that level of class about him. But again, at the time, that's what £6 million buys you. So you think right now the equivalent of that would be signing Tammy Abraham from Chelsea.
Yeah, you know, I've argued with people on Twitter about you know, the relative value of Sutton when we signed him. It's like you're talking about a guy that's been top scorer in the English Premier League twice and won a title.
I had a mate
at uni that had the review of the Norwich season for like 93 video. And I used to just sit and watch it because it was just Sutton on fire.
But did Sutton not start off as a defender though? And then he got moved up front and then
and scored hundreds.
He just became this physical presence. Yeah.
It's that thing of the physical presence and the brain, because that the goal against the Huns, the 1-0 game, it's a display of brutish strength an MMA ring or octagon or whatever it's called, and then to step up and Eric Cantona into the top corner, just a dink,
pure class.
It's one of the best goals Celtic have ever scored in our lifetime.
I would have been in the Lisbon Lions stand, was it Jockstein? I was in the Rangers end, I had was right in line with our goals. So I was looking right down as he did it, and you couldn't, when he chipped it, you knew he chipped it, but the depth perceptive was really, really hard.
Yeah.
But there was one wee guy at the other end was already jumping before it had even gone over Klos, because Klos had given up the goal. He knew it was done, and there was just this wee guy was already jumping, and I could see the ball, and I could see this wee guy's hands going up before it even hit the net. And because it was really, was it 87 or 88 minutes? It was really late on in the game.
Super late. They were celebrating. They were literally doing the bouncy.
Yeah, we just bounced out of that stadium ourselves. We were just like, yeah, was that the whitewash season?
Or was that the whitewash goal. That was it.
That was to guarantee the, was it six games?
Five or six, yeah.
I remember chatting to your brother about this, and you think back to that era, those couple of years, and you used to take bets on how many shots Rangers would have, not if they'd score a goal, would they even get a shot? There was one, I think maybe the cup game that year when Thompson scored that goal in off the bar. It was a 3-0 game. Yeah, I don't even think they registered a shot on target. And it was just, I think that was peak O'Neill, when it was just, they hadn't worked out a way of playing against this wall. Thompson and Agat were imperious,
That was the game when this period of time where Bob Malcolm FTP had played, I don't know, four or five games in a row, and you had Gordon Smith on BBC saying he was the best passer of a ball in Scotland. And it was the 3-0 game that Christmas where he stepped out of sort of right back position. You know, he was trying to do the sort of quarterback sort of thing.
Yeah.
And he tried to spray one over his left back and he hooked it out for a corner. And it was like, yep, Gordon Smith, best passer of the ball, sacrificing corners from 40 yards out. What a slump.
He's the ice cream van man now, isn't he? I read somewhere. Bob Malcolm.
Is this an innuendo?
genuinely, I believe he runs an ice cream van.
Fair play.
I'm sure someone posted it up on Twitter when I was away. No, so that, you got a 3-5-2. Boric, Boyd, Mialbi, Virgil, Agat, Tierney, McStay, Brown, Collins, Sutton, Larson. So yeah, probably spanning those three generations of, you know, that 90s generation, that kind of where I kind of got to understand what was going on, the Martin O'Neill generation, then the post. It's fun, interesting, only, so you got Brown and Tierney. Yeah, so only Brown and Tierney are making it in post-Martin O'Neill. Everyone else is Martin O'Neill or prior. Oh, sorry, Boric as well.
It shows Boric. How spoiled we've been. Do you know what I mean? We're the best team in the country, and we're blessed with the talents we get to see. The closing part of the show is the one that got away section, which is where I will ask you, in our Celtic lifetime, in your Celtic lifetime, which one player could we realistically have signed that you wish we had, but we didn't, for whatever reason?
I'll give you my answer in a quick second, but I grew up in the era of Kincladze for Celtic. You know, I'm sure there was T-shirts and banners made. I don't think anyone had ever actually seen him play. But we're Man City in the second division or something, but there was just this constant stream of, you know, Kincladze for Celtic. But
someone wrote a great article in The Guardian last year. I mean, I'm one of these guys that was a Kincladze fundamentalist. You know, he's the reason you watched Match of the Day for a little while. For anyone who doesn't know, Kincladze was this Georgian player that played for Man City back in the day. But someone wrote an article in The Guardian last year explaining that, you know, they got relegated for a reason. This wasn't a coincidence that this genius was in a team that went down.
He's playing up front with Paul Dicko. You've got to give him a break. But yeah, you know, I can clarify. It used to keep me amused, no end of time. But the real one that got away, when I look back over the years, the one that I feel could and should have been a Celtic legend, James McCarthy. I think he's, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but for a few shekels more, I felt he was the standout player. You could see he was a standout player. And Wigan done really, really well to pounce in and get him. And MacArthur was also a good player. McCarthy had that level of class about him. And was that the Tony Mowbray season and we just refused to pay the coin?
I think the story is we bought Nguemo, yeah.
Yeah, but in terms of, again, looking at those players that knew the Scottish League, that went on to bigger and better things, the Stephen Fletchers of the world, you know, the Callum Davidsons of the world that have all gone on and done great things in their careers down south, I thought Jimmy Mack could have been, I thought he could have been a proper player for us. Him sitting alongside Scott Brown would still be your centre mid today, you know, 10 years on.
Yeah.
I'll be looking at it, and obviously the fact that he'd be playing for Ireland would score pretty points all over the place. But I thought we'd seen enough of him to know the guy was a baller, and for the price that he went, you know, he's a far better player than John McGinn is. When John McGinn went down south, he's really raised his level. But in going down south, McCarthy all had that much more class about him. Been blighted by injuries, obviously, and he's still a Premier League level player. But yeah, I think if he'd come to us, I think you're talking superstar status. I reckon he's captain of Ireland, two World Cups. You know, he might even have retired Bruni by now.
Yeah, there's some players that would have been better Celtic players than anything else. Do you know what I mean? They should have stayed or come or hung around for longer. There's some players that I like the players that hang around. That's why I like Brown. I like McGregor. You know, guys that realise they've got a good thing. James Forrest, he's got a good thing. You know,
yeah.
He might not score every other week playing at another level. You know, and there's a lot to be said for someone who appreciates what they have.
James Forrest was in my other team. He was in my 4-2-3-1. He was the winger. He made it. But yeah, in fact, I went with the 3-5-2, and he had to fall out. But now, he for what he's achieved. And I agree, there's certain people connect well with clubs, and I thought McCarthy, we would have got a hell of a lot out of him. I think. And he would have done a lot with us. And you know, not he's done well. Went to Wigan, went to Everton. Was at Palace now. Yeah, I think he could have been a proper player for us. Very probably he could have been the new McStay, you know, that same level of poise on the ball as a centre mid, the real class act.
There was one night when I was comparing at the stand in Glasgow, the comedy club, and it would have been the amateur night, so I think that was a Tuesday night in Glasgow, and James McCarthy and the other one, the left back. There was three of them that went from Hamilton to
Wigan
or Burnley. I can't remember the left back's name, but someone had whispered to me, you know, during the break, oh, there's these three footballers there. And then I'd done a bit about them, or, you know, I'd like roasted them a bit or whatever. And at the end of the show, they all came up, and it was the third one. It was the left back, whose name I forget, was really nice and friendly and wanted to go for a night out, you know, thinking I was big time because I was the, you know, the compere at the stand. I was like, I've got a job tomorrow, you know. I'm out of here, you know. Early night. A good variety of players, which is good, because the part of the fear of this podcast was that everyone would come and give me the same 11 players. But I think you've showed a nice imagination and a different variety.
You've got to pick players that mean something to you but can also do a job. So, yeah, that's the pragmatic side of my brain there. Went with a team that would win in Seville, but I still got players in there that meant a lot to the heart, that connected with you, that you'd love to still see playing for the Hoops if they could. You know, you'd love to see any one of these guys back in the Hoops in their prime. You'd have no dramas with any of them. No, really, really good exercise, Tony, so thanks for the invite.
Right, cheers for coming on.
Right, hail, hail.
Hail, hail.
This podcast was brought to you by Supersound.
Super Sound.